WPHM now presents Paul Miller's Week in Review.
Good morning, everybody, and thanks for tuning in this morning. Last week were the Iowa caucuses. This coming week, New Hampshire. Michigan's presidential primary comes up in late February. That has local municipal clerks busy getting ready. On Thursday morning, we talked about the upcoming primary vote with Fort Gratiot Township Clerk Bob Beekler.
So this is going to be the first election cycle where Proposal 2 has been implemented. So lots of big changes. We are offering 9 days of early voting now for every state and federal election. That starts on February 17th and runs through the 25th. Definitely check with your local municipality for hours and things like that. I know some municipalities are partnering to kind of do a joint early voting site. The other changes are we're migrating from a permanent AV list where you would receive an application automatically before every election. Now you can get on a permanent ballot list. So we just send you out a ballot before every election. You don't have to request one and send that application in. The fun wrinkle with that for February is that for the presidential primary, you have to decide if you want to vote the Republican ballot or the Democratic ballot, or if there's a local issue on the ballot, you can just vote on that. Right. So clerks are sending out forms to those voters on the permanent ballot list for that ballot selection. So definitely, if you haven't received it yet, keep an eye out for that in the mail.
When is Michigan's primary election day?
Primary election day is February 27th.
And that's for Republican and Democrat?
Correct. Okay. Yes.
But you have to choose one.
You do, yes.
You mentioned early voting. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because a lot of people say, well, we've always had early voting in Michigan. I go a week before election day and get my absentee ballot and fill that out. It's not the same, though, is it?
No, this is basically we've got a polling place set up for 9 days of early in-person voting. So you can come into the municipality, get your ballot, vote it, and actually feed it into the tabulator, just like on election day. So that will be available to all voters for that 9 days. The law allows municipalities to expand that if they want to, the law requires that early voting be 8 hours, at least 8 hours that day. So for Fort Gratiot, we're going to be open from 8:30 to 4:30 for early voting on those 9 days.
What have some of the challenges been for you as a township clerk in getting ready for this presidential primary?
Honestly, there's just a lot of changes with how early voting is getting implemented. We've got new programs for the qualified voter file to make sure that people only vote once. So on the back end, that's been tougher. We've had to order new equipment and new training for election inspectors. It's definitely been interesting, but I'm excited for voters because it gives them more opportunities to vote. I know we've had a very robust absentee ballot system that has allowed people to vote early. This is just another convenient option for voters, and I'm excited for people to get out and vote.
Absolutely, and that comes up next month, and as you said, early voting will be a thing. Presidential primaries are different animals. What about for the rest of the year, May and August and November? Is that all going to be a little bit more normal, so to speak?
Yeah, early voting will still happen on all of those dates. For Fort Gratiot, I know we'll have an election in May. Not all municipalities will. Blue Water Area Transit's millage renewal will be on the May ballot. August is the state primary, and then November, obviously, is the general. We'll be doing the early voting for all of those. The absentee ballot applications this year actually allow you to choose which elections you want to ballot for the entire year. So that would be potentially one less form you need to fill out every election. if voters want to check on their status or follow up on their track their absentee ballot, Michigan.gov/vote has all of that information. That's the state's hub. You can actually register to vote there. You can apply for an absentee ballot, check your status. It'll tell you where your polling place is, all that good stuff. Our website, fortgratiot.us, we are updating that to include the election information. If you click on the department link, that will bring you to the elections page. Okay. And that has all the information on when and where everything is happening.
Fort Gratiot Township Clerk Bob Beekler with us this past Thursday. This week marked 5 years for a unique downtown Port Huron shop, The Closet by A Beautiful Me. It's a retail and social enterprise specializing in new and gently used formal wear. A Beautiful Me's founder, Karen Palka, joined us to talk about it on Tuesday.
5 years today we have been open.
Well, good morning and happy new year and happy five-year anniversary.
Thank you. Good morning,
The Closet has been open for 5 years now?
5 years today, yes. And the organization is 16 years old this year. But yes, the store today, 5 years ago, 2019, right, you know, when people were buying dresses.
Right, and just a year before everything
yes,
shut down.
Yes, yes,
how did this all happen? Not A Beautiful Me so much, but I mean, this is sort of the new chapter of A Beautiful
Correct.
Me 5 years ago.
Yes, someone called us and said, since you work with girls, someone wants to donate some dresses. Do you want them? I'm like, no, I don't want dresses just because we work with girls. And I said yes. And then they started multiplying. And so, you know, sometimes when you say yes, you figure out what you're going to do with them. I didn't want to have a brick and mortar store. What I wanted to do is provide business skills to teen girls. And so we're using that vehicle to do what we want to do, which is our mission.
They run the store, and that means not just running the store, but also all the inventory that comes in from a variety of different places, right?
Correct, yes. Inventory comes from, I'll see people just walking in one day with one dress that was just dry cleaned and maybe worn once, to a store that calls us and says, we're going out of business. Would you like our inventory? Brand new dresses.
That's the thing with formal wear, and guys are lucky because we can just rent a tux. We're going to rent the tux, we're going to wear it for the weekend, and then take it back to the rental place. You don't have that luxury so much with formal wear for women, but it's still stuff you're just probably going to wear once, maybe twice. Right?
Correct, yes, and the prices of these dresses are so incredible, and so why have that kind of expense when you can use that for other things like a vacation?
Yeah.
Something
exactly.
Really good and fun, but girls want to feel... There's something that comes along with this dress that makes them understand their value. So if they have to start to feel it outwardly, we want them to feel it inwardly. And so we have thought about renting, but we think just selling them will be a great idea.
You mentioned, you know, sometimes people will just bring in one dress, you know, they pick it up at the dry cleaner and bring it into to the store. But then sometimes you get a huge donation. You got one right before Christmas, didn't
you? Yes, we did. We got a phone call, and we had to make it happen within 24 hours. We had to go pick them up down in Allen Park, which is, I didn't know where Allen Park was. It's where the Big Tire is. We all know where that is on I-94. And we picked up 600 brand new dresses, very large dresses, meaning very full skirts, but the spectrum of sizes from 0 to 28, brand new with the tags on. And we have been inventorying them so that we can get them out to the consumers and have girls wear them for prom.
Which is right around the corner. I mean, I know we're sitting here on this very, very cold January morning, but prom season will be here very soon.
Won't yes, it? Yes. And they start shopping and looking and seeing what things that they want to purchase in January, February, March. And so that's why we thought we better get these out so that they can be seen, not only seen, but then purchased.
It's so great that these dresses have a second life. Or maybe even more than a second life, and don't just end up in a landfill somewhere.
That's right, because it's textile waste is the second largest waste in landfills. Second largest. And it's hard to even think about that, but when you do studies, it's fast fashion, it's people wanting to buy things cheap, and then we just give them to Goodwill, which really goes into landfills. Mm-hmm. So we want to have sustainable fashion. Our sustainable fashion then means that it's worn more than once, or if it can't be worn, we deconstruct it and turn it into a different product. And so the girls learn how to be an entrepreneur eventually and learn how to sew, create pillow shams, sell their product, all from a dress. So we start with selling them, though.
That's that is really cool. You've got a fashion show that you're going to have next month, right?
Yes, yes. February 17th. It's a Saturday at Wrigley Hall. We're very excited to have it there. We're going to have 40 different dresses on the runway. Students locally here are going to be modeling them. They're everyday young people. And not only do you get to experience this fashion show, but then you can shop there. We're bringing our dresses from the closet. We're closing the closet for a day. A good portion of them will come down to Wrigley Hall to try on so that people can see them for the first time because they are not on the floor right now.
And when we're talking about these dresses, these are not like 20-year-old dresses that have been worn 100 times. These are really, gently used current fashion, right?
It's current fashion, exactly. The ones that we'll be bringing for the show are all of the new ones that were just received to us. So they are this year's styles and this year's materials. So we just know that the girls are going to get an opportunity to get a savings, too, because we could sell them at that retail price, but we're going to sell them at 50 to 60% off. So girls can get a good price. They can then have a current style, and it's going to be a great afternoon.
That is really cool. We're talking with Karen Palka from A Beautiful Me. How's A Beautiful Me going outside of the closet downtown? How's the program going as a whole?
It's going great. In fact, we have a workshop starting today. We have three different workshops, three different communities, but one of them today is starting in our community here in Port Huron. And then girls are just thriving and signing up. We're selling out now of our workshops because we're starting to see girls need to get this internally, that they are valuable and wonderful and creatively made. So,
yeah, it's fantastic. The fashion show is at Wrigley Hall,
yes.
Saturday, February 17th in the afternoon. Where can people get more information about that or anything going on with A Beautiful Me?
So, we direct everyone to abeautifulme.com. That is our overall hub. We have a website for the closet, but really just going to abeautifulme.com. The tickets are available there to get information about a workshop, how to volunteer, all of those different things, because as a nonprofit, we need all of those different things. No money, no ministry, we need volunteers, and we just have a great community, and we just love being here.
It's Karen Palka with The Beautiful Me and their closet store in downtown Port Huron. The new year sees a new board chair at the Community Foundation of St. Clair County. Patty Manley was here to talk about her new position on Thursday.
Good morning, Paul.
This is a special year for the Community Foundation, 80 years.
You know, isn't that amazing? We are so excited. We're having a big party at the Convention Center in May, actually May 16th, and tickets are available now on our website. We haven't had this big of a party since we celebrated our 75th, so we're very excited about it. And the community has been great in the past at supporting these parties. And one of the things that we're really delighted with is we are going to honor Donna Neister and Chuck Kelly with the Lifetime Achievement Awards. They've spent decades in the community service and great philanthropic folks. And if you're lucky enough to know them, they're just wonderful people. So we are delighted to be able to honor them. And the Lifetime Achievement Award is not something we give every year. It is when someone the board believes has risen to the level of a lifetime achievement is when it is provided. So we are really excited about that.
Well, they certainly have, absolutely. How did you first get involved with Community Foundation?
I have been on various boards for probably 35 years. And approximately 10 years ago, I was asked to sit on finance committee because as a CPA, you always sit on finance committees.
Right.
That's what we do. And then I was lucky enough to be asked to sit on the board and then started the path of leadership. So it's been fun. It's been very exciting. I've learned a lot. It's an amazing organization.
How have you seen the organization change in the years that you've been involved in it?
What I've seen change the most probably is our view on scholarships. Mm-hmm. Scholarships have always been tuition-driven, and now what we've done over the last several years is try to move it towards getting the student out of school with a degree.
Right.
That may include some assistance with rent or utilities, not just tuition. So that's probably been a huge difference from when I initially started. Mm-hmm. We've got a great board and always looking to the future and being flexible with the things the community needs.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about what Community Foundation is for people who aren't entirely familiar with what the mission of the Community Foundation is.
Okay, thank you. Actually, what we do is we connect donors with opportunities in the community. Most of the grants that we provide, which were 900 grants in 2023, that totaled about $5 million. Most of that, Paul, though, was money that was donor-directed. So you can do that either during your lifetime or upon your death or both. And so that is a lot of what we do, is donors come to us with specific things they'd like to see accomplished, organizations they'd like to support. And through that, we then decide through our grants committee in some cases, or sometimes it's direct. The donors want to support the museum or Sons or something direct like that.
It's interesting, as you look across St. Clair County, all the different initiatives that have been undertaken by Community Foundation. Just in the last few years, there's been a ton of stuff that's happened, isn't there?
Yeah, we are delighted. The theater in St. Clair, if you've not had the opportunity to be there, it's amazing we have that kind of a facility in our county. With the help of the Ralph C. Wilson Foundation, we got the bridge in Fort Gratiot over the canal, so now that's connected the trailways. And it was my understanding that there were some of the high school kids that were actually able to be there when they set the bridge and get that some of that knowledge. So it's been, we do some amazing things. We're excited about what's coming up with the extension of the Bridge to Bay Trail in both St. Clair and Marysville. And near and dear to my heart in Marine City, the downtown marina.
That's going to be a great addition.
Yes, we are excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. What else is on the horizon in this new year for the Community Foundation?
Our grant funding has begun. So organizations are allowed, or encouraged actually, to go onto our website and apply for those grants. It's very simple. It's a one-page form, and it, when you go on and look at it, it actually says, think elevator speech, not thesis. So it's quite an easy form to complete. And then that goes to various, we have more than one grant committee. So depending on what kind of thing they're looking for as to what committee it would go to. So that's open. Our scholarship program is open. And that will close on the 3rd of March. So we're encouraging people to get started on that. We're really excited about the continuation of the Bridge to Bay.
Yeah.
Because that's, we've had some great opportunities with that, both with the Wilson Foundation and the Atchison Foundation. So that's...
It's going to be a busy year.
It's going to be a busy year. We're
and,
excited.
And, of course, the 80th anniversary, too. So the big...
That's huge.
Big celebration on May 16th.
Right? Yes, exactly.
And tickets are available now?
Tickets are available on the website, and we were very encouraged by the number of people we had at the 75th. So we're hoping that people will get in early and get their tickets.
After your years of being involved in community initiatives and now Community Foundation, how does it feel to be elected to the position of board chair?
Huge honor. Huge honor. In our 80 years, there's only been 40 chairs. So I am incredibly honored, very pleased. We have an amazing board and so easy to work with. What a great team we have in our staff. Jackie, Randy, they're amazing people with lots of energy and forward thinking. So it is an incredible honor. Of all the organizations that I've been able to be with, they all have brought some experience for me in the community, I think, to help me in this position. So
it's our conversation Thursday with Patty Manley, the new board chair for the Community Foundation of St. Clair County. The Detroit Red Wings have been playing pretty well lately. We got a chance to talk with the radio play-by-play voice of the Red Wings, Ken Cowell. That was Friday morning.
It just seems like the Red Wings right now in the 2024 part of their schedule just has the magic going. They've won a lot of late games, whether it be in the third period or in overtime. And the team's just exciting, and the guys are feeling it. I think the coach and the fans are feeling it as well.
Well, it's certainly much needed because it's been kind of a streaky team up till now this season, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, the team got off to a really good start, and then all of a sudden the injury bug hit them. And when you lose your two goaltenders and you lose your top two center icemen, it's hard to win in a league of parity. But somehow the Red Wings managed to get through that. They started to get healthy, and now they're back to their winning ways. And every game is so important these days, Paul. I mean, here we are, as you mentioned, just halfway point of the season. But it seems like every game's a game that you try to get into the playoffs, and you can't afford to fall too far behind. And on the other hand, you want to get on a streak so you can separate yourself from some of the other teams in the league.
Absolutely. Boy, the Red Wings keep adding points. I mean, I think seven games in a row now they've added points.
Yeah, anytime you can get points, it's a positive, and you don't want to lose in regulation. You get up to 31, 32 wins or losses, rather, in regulation. It's hard to make the playoffs. So you just got to keep battling. You just got to try to keep it close. And one of the things that the Red Wings are doing right now, Paul, is the fact that they're playing better defensively. Mm-hmm. Alex Lyon has been terrific in goal. I believe he's 6-1-1 in his last eight starts, and his save percentage is outstanding. And the team is playing better defensively in front of him as well. So you cut down the goals against, and we all know the Red Wings can score this year. They're the fourth highest scoring team in the National Hockey League. You're going to win a lot of games that way.
Absolutely. We've got the Florida Panthers. I'm sorry, that was the other night, Carolina Hurricanes. Have you taken a close look at the second half of the season schedule? How's it look for the Wings?
Well, they're in a stretch right now where the next five games are against opponents that are in the playoffs right now. So it's no easy task. And you mentioned the Red Wings play Carolina. That's a team that struggled a little bit earlier because of poor goaltending. They're starting to get a little better in that regard. But then they come home and they've got some really tough games against Tampa Bay, Dallas, Philadelphia, and the Vegas Golden Knights. And those are all tough opponents. But every game's tough in the National Hockey League. And you just have to find ways to get those points, as we talked about. And right now the Red Wings, I think, are on pace for about 95 points. And that should be good enough to get them into the playoffs. Now, again, you know, injuries play a big part of it. Red Wings are starting to get a little bit healthy. They did lose Patrick Kane. He's not going to play in the game against the Carolina Hurricanes, but hopefully he'll be okay for the homestand coming up.
Yeah, I think the hockey world was a little surprised when Patrick Kane said, yep, I'm going to go to Detroit. That's where I want to go post-rehab. But, boy, when you look at it, it just makes sense. It's been a nice addition, hasn't it?
Certainly has been, and he's provided the offensive numbers. And what's amazing is that not many players come back from the type of surgery that he had and really be successful at it. And they've been working him pretty hard. I mean, he's been playing 18, sometimes 20 minutes a game, and he's contributing offensively. So he's been a really good addition, especially on the power play. And this Red Wing power play is one of the better power plays in the league. Their penalty kill's getting better right now. But, yeah, when you get a guy like Patrick Kane on your team, you're going to have success.
Of course, and his old teammate Alex DeBrincat, who just looks like he's been a Red Wing forever, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I think he took the hometown discount in the summertime to come here in Detroit, and that's good for Red Wing fans. You know, he grew up in, I think it was Farmington, so he knew a lot about the Red Wings growing up. He went to the games as a kid, and now he's playing for his hometown team, so it's good to have him in the lineup.
Starting with Ken Cowell, the radio voice of the Detroit Red Wings. Any surprises so far this season in your eyes?
Well, I guess the surprise is all the offseason acquisitions that Steve Yzerman made has really paid big dividends for the Red Wings. And some of the younger guys that Steve has drafted are still developing in Grand Rapids or in college or overseas in Europe. But I think the players that he brought in are all NHL-caliber players, especially on the blue line. You look at Shane Gostisbehere, Jeff Petrie, Ben Sherratt came here a couple years ago. I mean, they've got seven defensemen now, Olimata, that can really play, and they know what it takes to win in the National Hockey League. So that's a plus right there, all the experience. And then up front, you've added guys like Daniel Sprong, who was a 20-goal scorer with the Seattle Kraken a year ago, and he's on pace to score over 20 goals again this year. Adds a little spark to the team. You've got some pretty good checkers in Christian Fisher and Clem Costin, who's been injured, but he's a big, strong body out there. So the players that were brought in over the summer are really helping out.
Ken Cowell, radio play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings. Just a few of the highlights from this past week on The Morning Show with me, Paul Miller. Be back at it again next week. See you Monday, 6 a.m.